This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Tuesday and a very big news day. Matt and Patrick here. Hi, Patrick. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Like you said, some of the big news just rolling in today.
I've got four huge stories to get to today that are... We'll talk about the impeachment trial. I cannot believe how bad Trump's defense team is. I'm waiting for something that looks like a competent response. But when I say, and I mean, if you ever watched the TV show Arrested Development, when I say it's like Barry Zuckercorns out there, I am not exaggerating. I mean, the one guy's like, wow, they're making a great case over there. What are you talking about? The entire argument is, I'll get to this more, but the entire argument just seems to be, hey, we know he's going to be innocent because they're all going to find him innocent. So they're not even going to try, which, by the way, is on par for Trump. You know, Trump could go on out there and try to put a defense out there. But you know what? Trump enjoys putting the Republican Party in this position where it's clear he's guilty. And making them say he's not. That's on brand. I'll get to that a little bit later on. Minnesota coronavirus update news on that as well. An insane story about the prison guards and Derek Chauvin, which we have to touch on. It's just a priority. But, of course, the number one story right now is what happened out in Buffalo, Minnesota, earlier today. Reading as it comes across here, 67-year-old man unhappy with health care. He received shot and seriously wounded five people at a clinic Tuesday in Buffalo, Minnesota, in what authorities described as a horrible scene where potential explosives were also discovered. Gregory Paul Ulrich, 67, of Buffalo, was jailed after the 10:55 shooting at Alina Health Clinic in Buffalo on Crossroads Campus Drive. I've been by that facility. If you play kids play sports in the West Metro, you likely have to play Buffalo every once in a while. I have been to this town. All my best to everyone in Buffalo. This is horrible. The police said they had multiple contacts with Ulrich dating to 2003. He had a history of being unhappy with health care he had received, said the Buffalo Police Chief Pat Budke. It was unknown. I watched some of the press coverage of Wright County Sheriff and the Police Chief of Buffalo talking, and they were very clear that they don't believe this is like a terrorist strike or some kind of anti-vaxxer thing. But they're not quite sure if Ulrich was attacking the building itself or was he specifically targeting individuals. It's not clear there yet. The history we have of this individual makes it most likely this incident was targeted by that facility or someone at that facility, Budge said. Because of the previous contact with him, this was an isolated incident or only directed at people within the clinic. Police found suspicious devices both in the clinic and a nearby Super 8 motel while Ulrich was staying. It's unclear whether they detonated. A female with three gunshot wounds was taken by air ambulance to North Memorial Health Hospital in Robbinsdale, where two others also were transported. Emergency medical personnel were heard saying on dispatch radio, two others were taken to Alina-operated Buffalo Hospital. The audio continued. The initial sheriff's office dispatch reports indicated that multiple people called 911 about an older white male in the clinic with a handgun. One dispatcher said his partner was on the phone with the suspect doing the shooting. He is saying there are bombs inside, the dispatcher is heard saying. He's telling law enforcement to back off. The man led a woman out of the clinic, but authorities were not sure about other hostages. The audio continued. The suspect was in the front vestibule while saying that he does not want to surrender now. The male is going to stay in place. He is lying on his stomach. The male is saying the gun is inside the building somewhere. State Patrol said its pilots were flying six boxes of blood in from the Red Cross to the Buffalo Hospital for the victims. There was initially a report that nine people were injured. They have kind of come back to say it's five now. The audio illustrated a frantic scene as victims streamed outside the hospital as officers rushed to evacuate them. There is an interesting story on Fox 9 that had a woman who literally pulled up to the health care center with her mother to drop her off for an appointment. And as they pulled up, two nurses come running out of the building, jump in her car and say, go, just go. There are gunshots being fired. Go. I've got four or five with gunshots back here, an officer said, adding that at least three of the victims were women, with one shot in the abdomen, another in the spinal cord, according to audio. Send as many ambulances as you can. State Bureau of Criminal Apprehension special agents and crime scene personnel are en route to assist in the investigation of the shooting incident involving multiple victims. The Federal Bureau of Tobacco and Alcohol, Tobacco and Firearms are also adding to the growing roster of assisting agencies. A spokesman for the full Alina Health System was heading to the scene early Tuesday afternoon to assess the situation and possibly disclose further details. There also was a high suspicion of a bomb threat directed at the Super 8 Motel about a mile south of the clinic, the dispatch audio disclosed, but its relationship to the shooting was not immediately clear. Despite someone being in custody coming soon after the shooting, word had yet to spread through the city. Staff in the nearby coffee shop closed its doors out of concerns for safety and were only letting customers in one by one. The sheriff's deputy went door-to-door at a strip mall within view of the clinic, asking whether anyone saw anything suspicious. Some of the shops are closed, but a few, such as a restaurant, remained open. A waiter that said he hadn't, other workers hadn't seen anything. State Representative Marion O'Neill, Republican from Maple Lake, whose district includes Buffalo, said in a statement that my friends, my children, and grandchildren live and work in Buffalo, and while we do not yet know who the injured are, we are all concerned. I want to thank the Buffalo police officers, Wright County Sheriff's deputies, and first responders who ran towards danger instead of away from it, and the medical personnel who made sure that the injured had the best care possible. Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey said his city had sent first responders to assist authorities in the community on the far west edge of the Twin Cities metro area. A large truck and trailer from Minneapolis Police Bomb Squad was backed up to the clinic as well. There is unspeakable depravity in doing harm to those who work to heal us, Frey said, those who have stepped up and risked their own health for ours. So that's the latest as we are at right now. Once again, a shooting earlier today in Buffalo, Minnesota. Gregory Ulrich, 67 years old, Buffalo. It sounds like, once again, this is an individual with a lifelong history of conflict with specifically the healthcare facility. You know, there is of course the usual speculation that was going on, whether this was it a terrorist, was it anti-vaxxers? Even one person, I think the Alina healthcare system, tragically, the president, I believe it is the president, lost their daughter down to Iowa State and was wondering if there was some connection. No, it sounds like some guy in a town with a gun, which, once again, guns suck. They just do. Oh, mad, it's too early. No, guns suck. And the reason why is that you have people that were shot in a medical facility, and we still are wondering if any of them are going to survive. I mean, that's how dangerous guns are. And I'd be remiss if I didn't point out once again. And I mean, it's sad, it's tragic. Another shooting has happened, but once again, we just started hearing from the argument from the right, the only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. And we are talking Buffalo, Minnesota. This is Buffalo. I have been to Buffalo multiple times. I was there, three times this fall. I have been in Buffalo. I have helped people out with campaigns in these areas. I can tell you without a doubt, there are plenty of guns all around. And yet, here we are once again. The good guy with a gun failed us at saving us. If you're going to make that argument, good guys with guns are the ones that are going to be the only thing that can stop the bad guys with the guns. Well, then I have to admit I'm just a touch skeptical because, once again, here's another situation where the bad guy with the gun is able to do the damage and very little in the way of any kind of ability of the good guys, supposedly in a conservative area where there are a ton of guns, actually being able to stop what is going on here. Ilhan Omar, I am devastated by the news of a mass shooting and bombing in Wright County, Minnesota. My thoughts are with the victims and their families right now, amongst many other Republicans sending their best wishes, many politicians sending their best wishes, both Democrats and Republicans, who are obviously outraged by this. And once again, I understand there are some people that, Matt, come on. Matt, just tell us the news story and don't add anything. Don't weigh in. Well, you're not going to solve problems unless you acknowledge what the problems are and especially look at them with clean eyes as we have another case like this unfold in America. Once again, it's not my argument that that we don't need any kind of common sense gun regulations in this country. It is the right who makes the argument that more guns are the solution. And yet, once again, in a conservative area where plenty of guns are at, the good guys with the guns did not stop this guy. I would be remiss if I did not point out that this guy was taken into custody, that he was not shot and killed on the scene. A 67-year-old white guy in Buffalo who had undeniably shot people and was deranged and there was bombs around, and yet somehow this guy, once again, was taken. It does not sound like he was shot. It does not sound like he there was a gunfire or anything like that. The police and the 911 dispatchers and all the people that were involved were able to eventually get him and arrest him, and he'll face trial. And I'd be remiss if I didn't point out George Floyd is dead today because someone said he thought he had passed a counterfeit bill, and without any evidence of him actually doing a crime, he was murdered by four police officers on the scene, along with a lot of other times where the first option is to, because they think they're warriors in Minneapolis, their first option is to shoot first and then figure out what in the heck happened later. Don't get me wrong. I'm glad that they were able to catch the suspect without gunfire being part of it. But it'd sure be nice if we tried that some other places in this state, namely in inner city communities. It just call me wacky crazy. But I want to point out as well, because this does tie into one of the discussion points we've been having the last week, namely about Paul Gazelka and the idea of the Governor Walz and asking for $35 million for security, a lot of that money going to the Minneapolis Police Department for Minneapolis during the Derek Chauvin trial. And Paul Gazelka saying no, and basically not only saying no, but following it up with a stance of, we're actually going to try to take money away from the city of Minneapolis. Ha, 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 ha. Something to that. I'm paraphrasing, of course. But that was Paul Gazelka. And it's worth our while. And once again, I understand, man, Matt, you're going to be cold-hearted here. Damn right I am. Because if we don't start acknowledging the world that we live in and the unfair playing field when it comes to how things are interpreted politically, well, then we will never solve these problems. Yes, you should call out the fact that the people who scream that, oh, we don't need a gun regulation, it's just good guys with guns will stop it all. And once again, they failed amazingly. It's worthwhile pointing out that here we are with, once again, I'm glad the police, without a firefight, were able to capture this guy. Why can't we do that when there's a large amount of times where we have a minority, a black man, a Latino man, a Native American man who is the subject of a police search, and that individual ends up shot or dead, regardless of whether they did the crime or not? My God, didn't we just have the video footage of a few weeks before the death of George Floyd of just grabbing a random black guy and putting him on the ground? And then arresting his brother, because he basically says, hey, what are you doing? I'd just love to see the same standards applied equally. That would be nice. See, I can do that. I have no problem doing that. And I know that the reason why the Republicans scream about how dare you, Matt McNeil, is because they know when we point this out at these moments, they don't have a defense. I'm just challenging their arguments. But it's the last point I want to make here before I get into a break, where it highlights the difference between Democrats and Republicans. When we had the problems here in Minneapolis, what was Paul Gazelka doing? Apparently, according to the Bob Kroll letter, trying to figure out some way to usurp Governor Walz and, I guess, install himself as commandant of Minnesota or something like that. And once again, he was on multiple TV stations that night talking about how he's been trying to get in touch with the White House of those problems. As a crisis is going on, here's Paul Gazelka trying to use this as a political tool to, for his own machinations. That's Paul Gazelka. When a crisis is going on, there isn't a way that he can't try to make it political as the city's burning. But you know what you didn't hear with this crisis in Buffalo? You didn't hear one Democrat say, you know what, I'm going to call the governor and get me put in charge. Let's criticize the people that are there. Nope. Not saying that. Not one Democrat has done that. As a matter of fact, they've sent very nice condolences. They've sent very nice wishes and hope everyone is okay. Hopefully everyone survives this tragedy. Big difference between what Republicans do and Democrats do in a crisis. And then I need to point out undeniably that right after Paul Gazelka, after the governor asked for $35 million to help keep Minneapolis safe, once again, and we've been pointing out for the last week, Minneapolis-St. Paul, the tax base here subsidizes the rest of the state. This is basically Minneapolis-St. Paul's money for the most part, and we want some of it back so that we can help keep the city safe. And Paul Gazelka says, no, we're not going to help you. And without any prodding or even a question, Mayor Jacob Fry sends Minneapolis first responders to this crisis scene immediately. Bomb squad, paramedics, police. Sends people out to Buffalo. Hey, I would even say that's out of the metro area. It's extreme tertiary suburb at best. And without even blinking an eye, Jacob Fry doesn't go out there and say, I don't like how Buffalo's managing their money. You basically can't have any help. Nope, he doesn't do that. He just sends in what he can and hopes that it can help. That is the difference between Republicans and Democrats. And if you ever want to know why I'm proud to be on the Democratic side now, is because I don't want to be one of those jackasses on the right that's always looking for some sort of crisis happening in a Democratic area to just sit there and prance and preen like the cock of the walk, and that they can basically, oh, I'm going to turn this into my own political fantasy. Tired of this. I'm tired of it. And I'm calling it out because if we don't call this crap out, if we allow this double standard to exist that has been created by the Republicans, well, then we're the fools. Then we're the fools. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I'll get to Gary's call in just a second. Also, just some other topics here as well to get to in just a moment. 952-946-6205. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Gary is in Minneapolis. Let's get his call on in here. Welcome on in, Gary.
Yeah, you know, the Republicans, most of them are they hide behind that Second Amendment. That is their interpretation of the Second Amendment, which has changed quite a few years back by the judges who was hacked. But if they think it works so darn good, why don't they compare the death rate? Not just in guns, just death rate in general in this country, with some country that has gun safety regulation.
Gary, you bring up a very good point about gun safety. Here's the deal. Clearly, this is a person who had multiple run-ins with the Buffalo police for years. Since, was it 2002 was in the story? I believe that's what it was. It said 2002 in the story.
2003.
Thank you. 2003. So 2003, for you know, 17 to 18 years here, they have had run-ins with this guy. If we had common sense red flag laws, maybe, just maybe, we could have prevented this guy from having a gun. And if you say to yourself, well, but someone might have given him a gun. So you're saying someone in Buffalo might have broken the law and tried to give a guy that was not allowed to have a gun, who clearly was probably, you know, clearly was mentally compromised. That the people of Buffalo are going to say, no, make sure he's armed to the gills. I don't think so. I don't think so. I absolutely do not. And I got to just tell you the truth. I am just, you know, it's, there are a lot of things. Universal background check legislation, red flag laws. You know, clearly this guy should not have had a gun in the first place. And we should stop with this asinine idea that, that once again, to all this is good guys with guns, because yet once again, good guys with guns suck at stopping the bad guys with the guns. And as multiple people have already pointed out to me, a lot of the time the good guy with the guns instantaneously switches and becomes the bad guy with a gun. And you can't tell when that happens. I will say, like I said, I know there are going to be some people out there like, Matt, God, that's, you're being cold-hearted going after these guys on this. Dang right I am. In the same sense is that I have, like I said, I've been talking all this last week about how I think it's time for a constitutional amendment that says that you, as your county goes, you only get the same amount of taxpayer dollars back into your county than you're paying into the state fund. So, because right now, once again, there are 60 counties just on transportation alone, there are 60 counties which take more money from the state than they put into the coffers. And the reason why they're able to get this extra money is because the Twin Cities metro area tax base basically pays for these counties to be able to have extra money. And yeah, usually I don't really have a problem with that. But when it's time to actually have Republicans step up and give Minneapolis-St. Paul the money they need to keep this city safe, which is, once again, our taxpayer dollars for the most part. You know, and we're not, it's not Lincoln County or Waseca County that's basically funding Minneapolis-St. Paul. No, these are our own taxpayer dollars, and we need them back so we can have be safe during the Derek Chauvin trial. Paul Gazelka, a politician that does not like the Twin Cities, does not like the people of the Twin Cities, he is basically saying, no, you can't have your money back. And as a matter of fact, we're going to try to take even more money from you. Because he's an absolute jackass. That's why. And so, yeah, you have to pass two constitutional amendments. One, you can only get the same amount of tax dollars back into your county as you basically put in. And two, if you need more, you need a two-thirds majority in the House and Senate to get that done, which means that all of a sudden Republicans are not going to just be able to be jackasses all the time. They're going to have to do something which they haven't had to be able to do in over 40 years, and that is be nice. Republicans will have to be nice and not be constantly putting forward rhetoric and constantly putting forward, you know, talking points of hate. Nope. They'd have to be nice because they need Minneapolis-St. Paul to bankroll them. That's why. And I had a lot of people in the last day or so come up and say, Matt, come on. That's not us. This is not the solution. We can't do this. I said, and to you, I say, I understand what you're saying. And in a perfect world, hey, if Paul Gazelka last week would have said, sure, fine, $35 million, let's make sure Minneapolis stays safe, I would not be bringing this up. But when you get to a point where not only are these people taking our taxpayer dollars and then ripping on us, saying we're stealing their taxpayer dollars, which is bad enough as it is. But when we sit back and tolerate being treated as second-class citizens in this state by a pencil-necked little dweeb named Paul Gazelka and the rest of the Republican caucus who refuse to help Minneapolis, even though most of the taxpayer dollars are from Minneapolis-St. Paul, I'm done sitting on the sidelines and just taking it and say, thank you, sir. May I have another? I'm tired of it. And so, yeah, it's a harsh solution. But in this day and age, considering that Paul Gazelka, even though we know there's going to be problems, we know that far-right extremists, mostly white guys from outstate Minnesota, are going to come pouring into Minneapolis and try to cause problems during the Derek Chauvin trial. We know that's going to happen. Yet he doesn't want to give us any money. Well, then, fine. If we have to take this back to basic math 101, let's make sure we do this correctly. And I'm 100% for this. I got to tell you the truth. I'm 100 still. I mean, I understand there are some people out there, Matt, we're better than that. Well, I'm tired of being treated like a second-class citizen because I am choosing to be treated as a second-class citizen. It's time for us to fight back and fight back because I guarantee you this. If this passed, I'm torn on it. On one side, I believe if all of a sudden this looked like this is going to get passed with the Republicans, hey, here's that $35 million. Gee willikers, whoever said we hated the Twin Cities? But another side of me would say, nope, they'd never come out. They just sit there and bitter and angry and stew and then act like all their prancing and preening and their jerkish behavior. When were we bad? We've always liked you guys. That they wouldn't say a thing until the end and then demand that we help them. Yeah, I'm tired of it. I'm tired of the double standard. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll get the latest on the impeachment trial. Story number two, which is a major one today. We'll get to that here in a second right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. This impeachment trial is insane. This impeachment trial is nuts. And it's nuts because I have no idea where Trump got his lawyers, Castor and Schoen. It's stunning. I mean, their initial argument is, oh, sure, he's committed a crime, but this is just not the venue to prosecute him. Oh, he's guilty. Oh, guilty, 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 guilty. Guilty. Oh, my God. Oh, God, that carcass is dead over there. He's guilty as the day is long. Yepers. That seems to be their opening argument. This is their opening argument of the impeachment trial. At one point, he says, boy, the prosecution's doing a great job here. What? Well, I'd find him guilty if I were. Oh, my gosh. You see what they just said? Holy cow. Boy, he's guilty. I mean, objection? even Cornyn has come on out and said, that was not exactly the strongest legal defense I've ever seen. Still, with this dog and pony show, the Republicans forced a vote on whether or not this even was a constitutional, trial, or was it not constitutional. It did pass. Six Republicans did indeed vote. Was it Kennedy? Kennedy from Kennedy or Cassidy, was it, that voted to basically say, yes, it was constitutional, but he had actually voted that the trial shouldn't happen. So it has been ruled by the vote in the Senate that this is constitutional, so this is going to continue. And yeah, let's just take a moment and just step back, okay? If Donald Trump himself kicked open the Senate doors, went down to the floor of the Senate, stood in front of the leader of the Senate and said, hey, I'm guilty of sin. Of course I did this. Of course I did this. We already know there is 25 Republicans who would still not vote to hold him accountable. That the guy could come out on the House floor, or Senate floor rather, and say, yep, I'm as guilty as sin. And they'll say, I think he's wrong. I think I'm going to vote to let him go. And kind of considering, and once again, considering the nature of his defense team's arguments, he might not be going down to the Senate floor and saying, yep, I'm guilty, but he's kind of putting forward an entire argument that, yeah, you know, I don't think you guys are going to convict me. I'm not really going to put up a defense. I'm going to just have this guy come on out. The first guy was a caster, came on out, and it sounded like he was trying to be some folksy kind of, you know, you big fancy city lawyers in your big U.S. capital. Oh, let me tell you a story about a record player, and let me tell you a story about Nebraska, and let me tell you about, and we know this, and boy, oh boy, those guys are sure doing a good job making me look bad. I think Trump's guilty. I mean, I'm not exactly sure what his entire strategy was, but he definitely was trying to do the folksy thing, and it was not working. But once again, this is it. My guess is that Trump is basically he's enjoying the fact that he's putting all these Republicans into this ungodly position, because this is what Trump likes. Trump likes unbridled loyalty, that you can be guilty of sin and everyone else can be guilty of sin, can see that you're guilty of sin at supporting this guy. And yet that you sit there and blindly defend him. He loves that. And that is what you are seeing right now. The facts don't matter here. The reality doesn't matter. And I'll get to the most damning piece of evidence against him in a second. But the facts don't matter to these people. They're just, this is a show that Trump is watching. I guarantee he's watching to see who exactly is loyal to him to the end. And would I put it past the guy to make a statement saying, yep, I did it, and I'm proud of it. I'm proud of what I did. And then sit there and watch as all these Republicans have to come on out and say, yeah, I got to find him not guilty. And, you know, it doesn't mean the Democrats don't do this job. Of course you do this. And by the way, once again, just want to clarify one thing. He was impeached before he left office. The impeachment happened in the House. That happened while he was in office. The trial happened afterwards, and it's still legal to do that. That is something most constitutional lawyers that are worth their weight in anything have all said, oh, yeah, you can try him after he's been out of office. Because the argument then is this, is that a president could commit heinous crimes against the country in the last few days of being in office, could sell off nuclear secrets, could make a secret deal to give Maine to another country or something like that. And there's no recourse. I mean, the argument they're making is there's no recourse to hold him accountable, which that is just ludicrous. The trial opened with, if I may, a bit of a heartbreaking element to it. And I wish I could play the video. I can't. Jamie Raskin, the Democrat from Maryland, he's the House manager of the impeachment case. And once again, reminder, in an impeachment trial, the House sends basically the prosecution team over to argue the case in the Senate. And so the prosecution team is made up of House members who are there to prosecute the case. And Representative Jamie Raskin is there. He is taking the lead role. He unfolded a pretty convincing argument that indeed Trump was guilty. But the clear evidence was a 13-minute video depicting the events of January 6th, introduced the impeachment case against Trump. The screen showed demonstrators marching on the Capitol. As this was going on, Senator Rand Paul looked down at the pad of lined paper in his lap. We'd already begun doodling with the pencil. Behind him, Rick Scott from Florida studied papers at his lap, taking only the tiniest of glimpses at the screen to his right. A few seats over, Tom Cotton also focused most of his attention on the papers in front of him instead of the images depicted on the insurrection on the Capitol. And a few seats from him, Marco Rubio did the same. The senators on the floor all lived through the events on January 6th, and it's impossible to know why certain individuals chose to look away. The facial expressions of those who did watch were varied. Some were focused intently, others stared blankly, some frowned. At least one Republican senator's face appeared to redden the longer the video went on. I would love to know who that was. They don't list it here in the Washington Post story. The video, it pieces collected by the managers and support team and complied by the firm DeBove and Plimpton, was the first taste of the audiovisual evidence that form a central part of the manager's case. To them, it undoubtedly matters whether senators are watching. As Raskin spoke, he stood up for the duration of the video while other managers were not visible on the House floor or in the upper gallery. Barry Berkey, a white-collar crime lawyer who also assisted with Trump's first impeachment, sat next to Raskin as the managing table, where the seats were placed far apart to accommodate social distancing. Senators also have the option of sitting in the gallery to create more space between lawmakers. Of the people on the floor, only the jackass Rand Paul and then Cynthia Loomis, Republican from Wyoming, did not have their face masks on during a pandemic. Can't cure stupid. And boy, let me tell you, Rand Paul is dumb as a brick. The video is heartbreaking. It is. It's just heartbreaking. It starts with Trump's orders. They do a very good job of getting out video footage from the crowd as Trump is speaking to them and hearing the crowd basically say, Trump wants us to march on the Capitol. Here we go. I mean, it's a direct speech, march on the Capitol, march down Pennsylvania Avenue, and the people in the crowd saying, yep, he wants us to go. Head on up there. And, it shows the people breaking through the barriers. It shows the people trying to get access to the building. It shows the vice president being whisked away and the brave D.C., the Capitol Police officer that led the crowd away from him. Shows Speaker Pelosi getting pulled away immediately. And basically then it shows the House and the Senate being, being told, it's time for us to leave. They breached the Capitol. And the thing which was – well, I'll tell you. I'll get to that in a second. They then, of course, show the people going into the Capitol. They're, rummaging through doors, breaking windows, assaulting police officers. And, a lot of assaulting of police officers. As a matter of fact, there's no way on the planet you could watch that video. And I'll post a link to it. It's up on YouTube now. There is no way on the planet you could watch that video. If you vote to not hold Trump accountable, you have forfeited the right to ever say you support the police or you support the cops. You will never be able to say that you support police officers and first responders. If you watch that, clearly the police were under attack. Police officer was killed. Multiple other police officers injured, including one who's been blinded by a jubilant Trump-screaming crowd that was clearly instigated by the president. And then the most damning evidence of this was the video of, hey, cuddle buddies, it's Donald, your best buddy. Hey, I love you. I love you. They stole it, but I love you, and you need to go home now because I love you. You're not wrong. They're the wrong ones, but I love you. It's time to go home. And then, and I'm paraphrasing, of course, although not by much. And then comes the tweet he sent 4 hours later where basically he once again repeats, they stole this election from me. They're the bad guys. You're not the bad guys. I love you. You're the good guys. And basically trying to justify this. This is the opening day. That's your opening salvo across the bow. I'm going to tell you right now, and they say they have a lot more evidence, including stuff that has not been seen, that basically points to Trump being the man behind this. It's what they are doing is, like I said, they are going to make this. We know you guys are going to let him off the hook, but we're going to make sure everyone sees exactly what you're letting him off the hook for. And that is disturbing. That is disturbing. Reminder, pretty much every single one of these Republicans, after they had to be evacuated from the Capitol building, after they had to be, you know, to be shuttled down into the secure part of the building, where basically these people were still trying to gas them and kill them and execute them. Oh, by the way, one of the things in the video, which is really stark, the moment Trump tweeted that Mike Pence has betrayed them and how the crowd instantaneously saw that tweet and turned on Pence. That was nuts. That was nuts. That was crazy. But every single one of these Republicans stood up and said, this has gone on way too much. We can't condone this. Trump is responsible. That's just that. So that's, you know, it's clearly Trump's guilty. Just after the first day of the impeachment trial, clearly is Trump's guilty. But he's not going to get convicted because the Republicans are cowards. And they basically know that this is their chance to show Trump how much he loves them. So because they're hoping that he'll campaign for them and they'll be on the right side of this. I will say this. If you are any kind of – if you look at where the Republican – you're a Republican and you look at your political party today. After watching what happened in that impeachment trial today – how the hell you're not saying to yourself, I'm done with this party. I'm starting a new one. How in the world you can continue to go on with this facade, this charade? The gig is up. We see you're naked, and it's not a pretty sight. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. I'll get Sarah. We'll get your call here in just a second. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Spiritual thoughts, spiritual light.
Criminal records, by the way, going back to the Buffalo story, criminal records. So Ulrich was convicted three times of drunk driving, and court records show in 2019 he's found not mentally competent to participate in criminal proceedings, but he was able to get a gun. Able to get a gun. Yeah. Good guys with a gun. Where were you, good guys with a gun? You suck at stopping these shootings. You guys are horrible. Maybe, I don't know, if you had laws in place that prevented some guy who couldn't even stand trial because he was mentally incompetent from getting an arsenal of weaponry. Maybe that might have stopped things. But until someone actually does that wacky, crazy idea. 952-946-6205. Seraph is in Minneapolis. Seraph, thanks for holding. Welcome on in.
How you doing, Matt?
All right.
Good. I'll try to make this quick, but my dad was a Baptist minister, may he rest in peace, so you might have to cut me off. But in light of the guy who did the shooting in Buffalo, in light of Dylann Roof, in light of all of the different situations and politics notwithstanding, Donald Trump, this whole thing is going to go the way the propaganda has been built for it to go for centuries, literally. And here's what I mean. When a European in this country does something heinous, I don't care how bad it is, they are immediately, because of propaganda, viewed as a good person who just went bad.
Misunderstood, yes. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, misunderstood. He had bad childhood, something, yep. Right? We know Trump came from a really screwed up life. I don't give him anything for that because he used that. But it's always immediately me. Was he a bad person, a good person, who just went bad? But when somebody of Moorish descent, who erroneously still called black, does anything good, the knee jerk is, well, that's just an exception. And if we push him hard enough, the evil will come out. That whole thing. When Malcolm X, may he rest in peace, said, the chickens have come home to roost. Here's what he meant. He meant when you give a human being so much rope, when you give a human being so much leeway, eventually it's going to come back to bite you. Because when you don't base your decisions on right and wrong, but base it on coloration or hue in the skin or something ridiculous like that and race, then it's going to come back. So now
you've got
crazy nutcase Europeans going into the capital looking for other Europeans to kill.
And Sarah, I'm going to cut you off because I'm at the end of the hour. Excellent points. Excellent points, Sarah. Thank you very much. I appreciate that phone call. And he's right. And you want to know the truth? He's right. Jacob Blake, for God's sakes, Jacob Blake was just going to his car to check on his kids. And the police officer, because he was a lazy, fat-ass cop, didn't want to have to wrestle him and turn him around. So he shot him how many times in the back? And they're not even prosecuting the cop. For God's. Well, he could have. There was a mythical. He might have mutant powers and he could get his ice dagger. And, oh, thank God we shot him. Meanwhile, here's this guy. Ulrich, once again, if the story is true that I'm just seeing here, where he was deemed to be mentally unfit to serve trial, and yet he's able to get a gun and was taken alive. Okay. Nope. The clear double standard of our society exists. It is definitely time for that double standard to end. And you have to have equality, and it's about damn time we did it. And for God's sakes, people. Hour two, Patrick Cooligan from Minnesota Reform are going to join us when we come back. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Brett Johnson, kind enough to join us. Brett, I want to read this to you. This is about the shooter out in Buffalo here. This is Fox 9. A former roommate of Greg Ulrich, a suspect arrested in connection with the shooting that left multiple injured in Buffalo, said the man is nothing but trouble. Ulrich, 67, was arrested Tuesday after reportedly shot several people, injuring five, at the Alina Health Clinic. He's also suspected of placing explosive devices throughout the city. Raymond Zastra was probably closer to Greg Ulrich than almost anyone, and he said he was unstable. He showed me his new handgun he got. I said, "What? You shouldn't have a gun," Zastra said. So he was able to get a permit for it. Hey, great system, Republicans. Great system. Zastra lived with Ulrich in his trailer home for 2 years until July of last summer when Ulrich got a restraining order against Zastra, who was trying to buy the trailer from Ulrich. He said Ulrich had a particular grudge against doctors in Buffalo. He didn't like the doctors because they wouldn't give him all the painkillers he wanted. They'd give him monthly supply and it'd be gone in a few days, said Zastra. So he's addicted to painkillers. But he got a gun. He said Ulrich had a particular grudge against one of the doctors and posted a sign in front of his mobile home calling him a quack. Zastra said Ulrich was frequently high on painkillers. Witness him sniffing model glue, smoke marijuana, drink excessively, and just sit on a couch high. He said a year ago he also saw Ulrich received granting a permit to carry weapon. He got a permit to carry. They knew he was a whack job, said Zastra, referring to local law enforcement. Permits to carry a weapon are not considered public documents in Minnesota. Fox 9 reached out to Buffalo Police and Wright County Sheriff for comment. If you gave him this gun, you better be commenting. I'm going to be honest with you. He said police shut up more than a dozen times while he lived with Ulrich. Criminal records show Ulrich was convicted three times of drunk driving, and court records show in 2019 he was found to be not mentally competent to participate in criminal proceedings. In a protracted civil case, Ulrich was accused one of his neighbors of stealing his parking space. The case stemmed from an incident 12 years ago. A judge recently dismissed the case because it exceeded the statute of limitations. Seriously, how in the world did this guy get a gun? And, I mean, if this isn't a poster child of why we need to revisit our gun laws in this state, I don't know what it is. But you have what seems to be a 20-time loser who's mentally uncompromised, addicted to drugs, has made threats to people, and the police department gave him a permit to carry.
And on top of that, the one that stuck out at me is that you said he wasn't competent enough to stand trial, but yet he can buy a gun. That is
How is that a functioning society?
Answer, yes.
Yeah. How is that a functioning society? You know, it's scary because we are in the caller and Seraph, who called in before we went to the break, he talked about the double standard we have. You know, there's no way on the planet an African-American would get a gun permit if he had that kind of record. There's just no way on the planet he would be given that weapon. You know, the story that was out and they're back in the Yosemite Sam's back in the news. The co-owner of the Lakeville Bar, who notoriously for defying the governor's pandemic shutdown orders, is back in jail after being charged with hitting a Jimmy John's manager in the face for telling his companion to wear a mask. Baldazzo, this is the guy of Prior Lake. He is charged with two counts of fifth-degree assault, one for a count of disorderly conduct. He was jailed Monday night after his $750,000 bail was revoked for two counts of first-degree attempted murder and two counts of fifth-degree assault for allegedly firing on numerous rounds in his mother's Burnsville house as police surrounded it. No, he jumped out the window with a gun in each hand, a la Yosemite Sam, and then surrendered. The video of the Rosemont Jimmy John's incident circulated on Facebook after the victim's mother sought to identify the assailant. Baldazzo and his bar co-owner, Lisa Monet Zarza, this is the one that's been basically talking about, I'm standing up to Governor Walz. She was the woman in the video with Jimmy John's that was refusing to wear the mask. They co-own Alibi Drinkery, against which the state has taken multiple retaliatory actions for violating shutdown orders. How does a guy who opens fire with a gun in each hand at police get bail? Because if he was black, he would not have bail. And it wouldn't, you know, it's just, I mean, the systemic racism that we have in our society is so obnoxiously blatant that it's just, you know, here we are. You've got more examples of it, and yet, you know, people right now, I guarantee you, there are Republicans right now who are trying to formulate a response to say how this guy, this Ulrich guy that shot up the hospital in Buffalo, how him having a gun, isn't that a great sign of America? That you know, they're out there, they're trying to figure out some way to spin this as a, isn't it great that he had a gun? That's who these people are.
Yeah, that's exactly what they're going to do. And speaking of Ulrich, the guy who was the Buffalo shooter, if he was black, he wouldn't be alive right now.
Oh, no, he wouldn't. He wouldn't. Absolutely not. He would not be alive right now. He would be dead. And this guy, and let's make sure we understand, he shot five people in the hospital, set bombs across the city of Buffalo, and once again, taken into custody. Jacob Blake wanted to check on his kids in his car, was shot, eight times in the back, paralyzed for life. Down in Milwaukee, down in Kenosha.
Mm-hmm.
It just is, once again, it's the double standard we have in our society is ugly. That we've had, of course, a full hour of just the two major news stories, the impeachment and the shooting in Buffalo.
Right.
I want to get Patrick Kulikin from Reformer is going to join us. You guys are going to actually touch on some of the other stories that are going on right now.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. We purposely avoided the Buffalo story because when I recorded this, it's going to be out of date at that point. So if you're listening and wondering why we're not talking about it, that's the reason why. But there is lots of other news to talk about, at least at the state legislature and in Minneapolis itself. I don't know if you've been to South Minneapolis and noticed the number of helicopters that seem to be constantly flying over the area.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they wrote a story on this in the Minnesota Reformer, and we're going to talk about it. And there are some big concerns there because we have no answers as to what sorts of cameras are being used on these helicopters, what data is being recorded, a lot of real privacy concerns. So we'll touch on that. And then over at the state legislature, Republicans are making a new play, a little bit of a twist on what they want to do to try to stop Governor Walz and his emergency power. So that's what we got coming up.
Patrick Kulikin from the Minnesota Reformer. Brett Johnson is right here on AM 950.
We're joined now by Patrick Kulikin. He is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. Great resource to find out what's happening in the political and news world in Minnesota. Their website, of course, is minnesotareformer.com, as we have a number of topics to talk about today, including helicopters flying over South Minneapolis. If you live in the area, you've probably heard them over the past few months. We'll also be talking about the $15 minimum wage and some news from the state legislature. So, Patrick, welcome back to the show today. Good to be speaking with you.
Good to be here, as always.
So I got to start with this story right here, because even though I don't live in South Minneapolis, I do have some friends that live in the area. I've, of course, visited there a couple of times over the past few months, and I've noticed this too. There have been a lot of helicopters flying over the area pretty much at all times of the day. And you guys wrote about this today in the Minnesota Reformer, trying to get some reasons as to why we're seeing these frequent flyings of helicopters. So what did you end up hearing in terms of why this has been happening for the past few months?
Well, actually, I think it's been going on even longer since the George Floyd, the unrest following the police killing of George Floyd, and there was a spike in violent crime and especially carjackings, and the Minneapolis police are under a lot of pressure to try to reduce those crimes, and they're using helicopter surveillance to do so. It's a little unclear how exactly they do it. They point to successes, including a wave of arrests late last month. But for the residents of South Minneapolis that we talked to, who are already quite skeptical of the police, not just because of their political orientation, but obviously because of the events of the last 9-10 months, they are distressed. Not just because it's kind of a nuisance to always have that noise, but they're also wondering what kind of data is being collected and how it's being used and how it's being stored and potentially shared.
Yeah, and residents, I think, have very legitimate concerns about the idea of, well, is this just constant surveillance? I mean, if I'm getting a helicopter almost constantly flying over my house, I mean, I can certainly get the idea that they're trying to stop some of these carjackings that are going on. But yeah, that can be a little terrifying to think about some of the legal aspects of, well, is this constant surveillance of citizens in Minneapolis?
Right. I mean, and what kind of community do we want to live in where not only do we have this nuisance, but we also are concerned about a kind of local police state. On the other hand, I don't want to dismiss or minimize the concerns about crime. Carjackings were up apparently 300% last year, and obviously, and it was also a rise in other types of violent crime. Violent crime was up 21% in Minneapolis last year. South Minneapolis certainly bore some of the brunt of that. I think it's just a tough situation, but I certainly I was glad that we were able to go out and talk to residents and really get their views of it. And for the most part, what I've seen in the rest of the local press has just been comments from the police.
So what exactly do we know about these helicopters, or what have the police or the city told us about them? Do we know anything about the technology they're using, or what exactly they're doing with some of these videos and imaging and images that they've been captured, or do we not really know a whole lot at this point?
Well, we asked the Minneapolis Police Department and good old John Elder, their spokesperson, just sent us a press release about all the arrests they had made. And so we still don't know exactly what type of technology they're using or what they're doing with the information they collect or even how it works. I mean, I'm not even clear on how helicopter surveillance leads one to then apprehend a carjacking suspect. I don't know exactly how it works. I expect we'll be doing some more reporting.
Yeah, I wouldn't quite know how that works, too, unless, yeah, they got to be using some sort of specialized camera, or, well, that's just speculation. I suppose we'll hopefully learn about that more in the future as we possibly will get some more transparency on that issue with all those helicopters flying over Minneapolis over the past several months. I want to move on to another topic you talked about today in your newsletter, and that's this report from the Congressional Budget Office, of course a nonpartisan Washington, D.C. based office, and they did a report talking about the effects of a possible $15 minimum wage that's being proposed in Congress right now, and lo and behold, looks like it would reduce poverty and really help a lot of people that are currently struggling right now economically. So what else did your Washington Bureau for the Minnesota Reformer find out from this CBO report, as I know a couple of your writers had a chance to sift through this report from the CBO talking about the impacts of the $15 minimum wage?
Yeah, I think something like 17 million Americans would get a raise, and I think 900,000 Americans would be pulled out of poverty. There are a number of states that don't have their own minimum wage, because the federal minimum wage is actually the floor, and a number of states don't have anything above that. So people in those states are making $7.25 an hour. Hasn't been raised in more than a decade now. I think it was 2009, and it's essentially poverty wage. There would be public policy is often about trade-offs, and some employers would probably look to reduce their employment roles rather than pay this higher wage. So there would be some job loss, these are speculative forecasts, so it's hard to know. There's been quite a bit of research raising the minimum wage is a net gain for people at the bottom of the income ladder, and those are the Americans that for decades have been left behind of economic growth. So I think it's an encouraging report. The only problem is it also said that because it would send some people onto the unemployment rolls, it would increase the federal deficit, and because of that, the Senate can then pass it on a simple majority vote using what's called the reconciliation process. It's a parliamentary maneuver that gets around the required 60 votes they would need to get by the filibuster. So they only need 50 votes. However, West Virginia Democrat Joe Manchin has said he's not in favor of the $15 minimum wage. Hopefully he's willing to negotiate on that, and they can extend it out over a longer period, because the increase is actually gradual. It would not go immediately. It would take several years. 2026, I think, is the plan. They still need to get Manchin on board, and of course that's going to be the story in Washington for the next year and a half, I think. But for the most part, pretty good report. And I think it gives some momentum to raising the minimum wage and whatever the COVID Relief Act passes in the next 6 weeks or so.
Yeah, and I know this is certainly a national issue, but it would have impacts in Minnesota. And you have a pretty good political ear when it comes to looking at some of these issues. Do you think this CBO report could maybe sway someone like a Joe Manchin? Or I'm even thinking about some of the other moderate Democratic senators who haven't explicitly said that they are against a $15 minimum wage, but could definitely share some of the same concerns that someone like a Joe Manchin has. Do you think that CBO report could have any impact, or is it going to be probably more behind closed door negotiations?
I think that's good political cover for them. There probably is some negotiation. Maybe they can stick some federal building in West Virginia and get him on board. But what Democratic senators, quote unquote moderate Democratic senators, should realize is that every single time an increase in the minimum wage is on a statewide ballot, it passes. And the most recent example is in Florida. Florida is, we think of it as a swing state. It's really not that much anymore. It's mostly a Republican state, and Trump proved it. He won it twice, but it passed as a sharp increase in the minimum wage. And that's been true all around the country, no matter how conservative the state is. People support a higher minimum wage. And so Manchin, I think, would be foolish from a purely political standpoint to block this. And obviously, from a policy standpoint, in my view, the increase is a good idea.
We're speaking with Patrick Kulikin, editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. Website is minnesotareformer.com. I want to switch gears now and talk about some news from the state legislature, where State Senator Dave Osmek is proposing a bill that would change the emergency powers of Governor Tim Walz, where instead of directly stripping Governor Walz of his power, his bill would mean the governor would have to seek legislative approval before he can enact emergency powers. So a change in tactics for the Republicans, but
but Patrick probably still unlikely to go anywhere at the legislature, especially considering that the House is still controlled by the DFL.
Right. This is not actually going anywhere, but the Republican base is certainly thirsty. They think that Walz is a quote-unquote tyrant, and so they want to make a change going forward so that the governor can't just claim emergency powers and then have the legislature have a chance to overturn them with a vote. What they want to do is force the governor, whoever it is, in the next emergency to go to the legislature and ask for emergency powers. And obviously, that's a much higher fence to climb. So as you said, certainly Walz would veto this, and the DFL House is not going to pass this because it probably makes our state government a little less nimble in the case of an emergency. If they have to go to the legislature, what if the legislature is not in session? That's an issue. I think politically, Walz is still going to come away looking better than the legislature when it comes to dealing with the pandemic. Although I think that he does run, he's starting to run real risks with a lot of people with kids in school or more accurately, not in school.
Yeah, I agree there. That probably is the one danger area he could run into in the next few months. And we'll see what happens. As I know earlier today during his news conference, he was saying with some of the encouraging numbers we're seeing, there's maybe a chance they could start to move some of the upper grades to classrooms. So, yeah, he's most certainly thinking about that as well. One other topic I want to talk about with you at the state legislature here, Patrick, is something you wrote about in your newsletter today. And it's a creative way for Republicans to cut money from areas of the budget that they don't necessarily like, mostly thinking about social programs. So this bill being proposed, I believe, by John Howe, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Patrick, would put 60% of sales tax revenue from auto parts into the highway fund, which is an increase from the current 52%. Now, I know this sounds like boring, wonky math, but by doing this, essentially what they're doing is dedicating more tax revenue to the highway fund, which is something Republicans obviously like, which could lead to cuts in other areas. So this is some interesting gamesmanship by the Republicans right now, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think there's a pretty good decent chance that they would pass this and make it part of endgame negotiations with the governor and the House Democrats. One of the advantages the Republicans have is that they don't want things from government. Yeah. So when they're at the legislature, they're in sort of a stronger negotiating position because they don't have constituent groups, and it's just not in their ideology to expect government to do things to promote the social welfare. But roads is one thing they do like. They like this. They think that government ought to spend more money on roads. So what they're doing is they're just shifting money out of the general fund, which is where schools and, as you said, social programs and health programs, how they're paid for, and just set it aside for roads so they get more road money. And that's less money that the DFL has to spend on programs that they believe in. So it's these little, as you said, gamesmanship that can really have an effect here, and that you do it in a few different places and it adds up to real money, and it's a good negotiating bargaining chip for later.
Yeah, and it does have Republicans force Democrats into some tough votes, possibly thinking, well, if you don't vote for this bill of increasing the amount of money that goes to the highway fund, well, you can say, well, look at this legislature. They're not in favor of funding roads. So, yeah, there certainly are some traps there for Democrats that they'll have to be careful with as the legislative session goes on, because as you were alluding to, this probably won't be the only area of the budget where Republicans are going to attempt this type of maneuver.
Yeah, it's going to be a complicated negotiation. Republicans are not going to raise taxes right now. I mean, we don't know. This may change with a federal COVID relief bill with some money for state and local government. But as of now, there's a deficit, and they're not going to increase taxes. And the DFL is not going to cut education. In fact, they want more education. They a House panel passed a plan for more today, or they at least heard a proposal for more money for education today. So it's going to be tough at the end, and they have to pass something, otherwise the government shuts down.
Well, you mentioned the phrase government shutdown, something that nobody wants to see, especially during a pandemic. But I do wonder if that possibly could happen during this session, especially in light of the recent news that Paul Gazelka looks like he is seriously considering a run for governor, as he told WCCO yesterday that he is considering a run for governor and will likely come to a decision by the summer of this year. So if he runs for governor, well, good chance we're going to see more gamesmanship at the state legislature when it comes to negotiating the budget.
Right, and this is something that I've been saying for a few months, that it was going to make this session more difficult when you have two guys who are at the negotiating table over the budget who are running for governor against each other potentially. And it's especially difficult for Gazelka, because if he's going to run, he's going to have to win over the really hardcore conservative and I guess Trumpists now, activists who are going to be at those local nominating conventions and then at the state Republican convention to endorse someone like Gazelka or not. And even if he were to be in a primary, the primary voters tend to be much more conservative than the broader electorate. And he's, I mean, even unconsciously, he can say that he's not going to consider any of that while he's at the negotiating table or passing any of these bills. But I mean, even unconsciously, that's going to be factoring into this whole process. And it's going to be very difficult for him to negotiate with Walz, because Walz is now really widely loathed by, I think, the Republican base. And they do not like compromise. There's an infamous line, I think, from the 1990s by former House Majority Leader Richard Armey, who likened bipartisanship to date rape, which I know is just a horrible thing to say. But that there's a strain of thinking in the Republican Party, I think, that that's the case, and they will punish anyone who negotiates with the other side.
Yeah, as you mentioned, that's an attitude from Republicans that really took hold in the 90s, accelerated during the 2000s, during the Bush administration, and especially even more during the Obama, Trump, and Biden presidencies. The idea that Republicans negotiate with nobody no matter what, and it's a win at all costs mentality. Well, we are unfortunately just about out of time, Patrick, but do appreciate you joining me today. That is Patrick Houlihan. He is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. Great resource to find out the latest of what's happening in the political world in Minnesota. That website is MinnesotaReformer.com. Patrick, thanks for joining me on the show today.
Good to be here.
All right, we'll take a break and turn things back over to Matt McNeil up next on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. We've got some breaking news here. One of the nurses who was shot in the Buffalo Alina Clinic has passed away at this point. Kara Levin is reporting that indeed one of the nurses who was shot has died. The other four who were injured by the shooter remains to – no reports yet on their status, but once again – one person has tragically passed away. The Star Tribune's running a story which seems to try to make an argument that he was the shooter Ulrich. He was denied a permit, but Fox 9 is reporting that the roommate said he was given a gun permit. Clearly something needs to be figured out here, because clearly this guy should not have had a gun. And I don't care. I don't care what anyone thinks about Second Amendment rights. This person, a mentally unstable man who was deemed not to be fit to go to trial, a man who clearly had addiction problems. This man should not have had a gun. And yet somehow he got a gun and he's killed one woman, injured another four, planted bombs across the city, And once again, we need an answer on whether it was Wright County or the city of Buffalo, did they issue this man a gun permit? Because there needs to be a review of what the freaking hell your process is. And don't give me this, well, we really can't stop anyone from getting a gun. You can't? How's that working out for you? Dear Lord. Dear Lord, is this messed up, the gun culture in this country. Just tragic. Just tragic. Let's take a break. When we come on back, we'll move on to another major story, the Minnesota coronavirus update. We'll get that, plus a story about the correction officers who could and could not watch Derek Chauvin. We're going to talk about that as well. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. How does a guy like that get a gun? How does a guy like that? I mean, if it's true that he had a permit to carry a gun, how is that even possible? Stunned. Just stunned. Tragic. Minnesota's coronavirus update for today. Minnesota's COVID-19 positivity rate has fallen to only 4% amid continued signs of declining pandemic activity and rising vaccination numbers. The decline is encouraging for state residents because the positivity rate of diagnostic testing is considered a key indicator of the spread of the coronavirus that causes COVID-19. The rate, which had peaked at 15.5% on November 10th, hasn't been this low since June. Wow. The Minnesota Department of Health on Tuesday reported 6 new deaths of COVID, also 586 diagnosed infections, bringing the state's totals to 6,308 deaths and 469,254 infections. Although 5 of the deaths occurred in long-term care facilities such as nursing homes, health officials say there are early signs COVID-19 vaccinations are starting to reduce infections in those places. The state on Tuesday reported that 569,164 people have received the first of 2 doses of COVID-19 vaccine. That's over 100,000 more than people that have gotten sick, which is a great sign. And basically 162,132 had completing both doses. Once again, those are positive signs. More than 41% of first doses have been administered to people 65 and older. Governor Walz on Monday announced a one-time diversion of 8,000 vaccine doses not being used in long-term care facilities this week to Walgreens pharmacies for senior citizens. Walgreens and Thrifty White are also planning to administer 16,000 doses to senior citizens as part of a new federal partnership program. Exact times and locations of Walmart and Walgreens pharmacy vaccinations haven't been announced. Walgreens is planning to offer doses in Hennepin, Ramsey, Dakota, Anoka, and Washington counties in the metro area. Mauer, Kandi Ohi, Beltrami, Hubbard, Morrison, Rice, Olmsted, Steele, Freeborn, St. Louis, Stearns, and Nicollet counties in greater Minnesota. Thrifty White listed 6,200 vaccine appointments with 40 locations across Minnesota at 11 a.m. Tuesday. The appointments go quickly, understandably. State officials said they're encouraged by the pandemic trends but remain concerned about the potential of a new wave of infections and the threat of new and more infectious variants of a coronavirus. They encourage continued social distancing and mask wearing, noting a report from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention last week found declines in COVID-19 cases in 10 states, including Minnesota, that had imposed mask wearing mandates. Gee willikers. It's almost like all the things that the Republicans have been telling you about how Governor Walz has been handling this has been a lie. It's almost like everything has been a lie. I will agree with one thing that Brett brought up with Patrick Cooligan is that, if once you get these teachers vaccinated, now I already know there are going to be some teachers, bless you, because teaching is one of the more difficult jobs, period, that are just not going to be comfortable until this is completely under control, coming back into the classroom. More power to you. That's, I don't like that some of the private schools I've heard basically became like mob enforcers with their teachers. You better show up or we'll fire you and we'll take everything you got. We'll take away your benefits and we'll take away your health care. You better show up. Reginald's kid is not going to get educated himself. That sort of thing. I didn't like how that some of the, I mean, and then it's like I said, I'm not going to say where, but I'm just some of the private schools I heard less than stellar treatment of their teaching staff. I think you have to give teachers the ability to do this from home if they can, and work around this until this is under control. I will say too, and can we just say we're a little over almost 3 weeks since Joe Biden became the president of the United States. And considering, I mean, if you saw the interview he did on CBS before the Super Bowl, he clearly was – they got there and there was nothing. There was no plan. There was no vaccine. There was no stockpile. There was nothing. And it seems like what was really going on was Trump would order the federal government to buy a bunch of doses and then specifically deliver them to specific states and get them vaccine at the expense of everyone else. And that's just and so that was their plan. Since then, now Biden has upped his pledge of 100 million doses in the first 100 days to 150 million doses in the first 100 days, which is great, which means that, you know, we're going to be, and once again, I'm going to presume that means two doses, considering that's what you need for most of these vaccines to work. I'm going to presume that means that we're going to be pretty close to well over half the country vaccinated by the time we get into the summer, which is bravo. This is what leadership is, people. As these Republicans are out there defending a guy who, because he was a petulant little man-child who was upset because he lost a presidential election, he forced his supporters to attack the Capitol, or incited is the right word, incited his supporters to attack the Capitol. This is what leadership is supposed to look like. And by God, I got to tell you, the truth is, by the way, is it just me or are the rest of you out there not looking at your phones nearly as much as you used to? I got to be honest with you. I am not looking at my phone nearly as much as I used to, which is, I think, a very good thing. I think it's because I don't have to worry about what circus fire I've got to deal with right now because of Trump. Also in the coronavirus update today, because I don't know, we're being really successful and Governor Walz is doing a good job dealing with coronavirus. Three Republican legislators induced articles of impeachment on Monday against the Democratic governor over his use of executive orders during the pandemic. Can you imagine how bad this state would be if the Republicans were in charge? Holy God. Oh my God. I can't even comprehend. I can't. Their resolution, the Three Idiots Resolution, claims Walz's actions during the COVID-19 emergency have gone beyond his constitutional authority and violated Minnesota's rights. A spokesman for the governor noted that Republican lawmakers have made these same arguments in court and judges have repeatedly rejected them. It's up to the courts, not legislators, to decide what is and is not constitutional, Walz's spokesman noted. The resolution is proposed by Representative Skintag. That's Eric Mortensen, the Republican from Shakopee, that far-right loon ball who's only in there because the mysterious third-party candidate, which sure looks like it was a fake candidate run by Republicans. Thanks, pro-marijuana party. Shakopee's loon ball and two other members of the new House Republican caucus. I believe it's Drazkowski and Munson, isn't it? Jeremy Munson, I believe, are the two other people that have sponsored this bill. Mortensen introduced five articles of impeachment. His resolution contends, in addition to failing to respect the separation of powers between the legislature and the executive branch, Walz restricted freedom of religion, took private property, blah, 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 blah. They are clearly just, they're furious that he's actually dealing with this crisis effectively. That's what this is all about. And this is just it's political theater. It's the epitome of political theater. And, I have zero doubt Shakopee is going to throw Representative Skintag out hard in the next election. But, what are you going to do with guys like Munson and Drazkowski, where basically there are, because the people that vote for them don't care on how bad their lives are screwed over by the representation they keep electing. So what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Like I said, if you go back and do what I say, which is you go to these counties and say, you know what? You can only spend what you pay in taxes. I guarantee you first of all, most of the people in those communities would probably be for that because they've been brainwashed by Republicans to think that they're paying far more into the state than they're actually getting back, which is the complete opposite. And so they'd all be for it, and then all of a sudden they'd be sitting there wondering why all the Republicans had been lying to them for all these years about how much money the Twin Cities has been sending to their county. You know, there's another plus side to doing it that way. So 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. One more story to get to, and it's a freaking doozy as well. And we'll try to get an update here on the other stories as well. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
With a dream, my cardigan. Welcome to the land of fame excess.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. It sounds like Trump is storming around Mar-a-Lago, furious at the opening arguments by his lawyer. That's the latest. Apparently, he's been screaming all afternoon about the opening arguments by his – what is clearly one of the most incompetent opening arguments I've ever seen in my life. As far as, once again, the other story, of course, the main story we've been following today in Buffalo, the 67-year-old man Gregory Ulrich of Buffalo has killed one and injured four, along with placing bombs throughout the city of Buffalo. How in the world this guy was able to even, I don't know. You have to have some sort of case where if a guy is not mentally competent to stand trial, then how is this guy getting a gun? How is this guy getting a gun? A lot of other stories going on, but I got to mention this. Eight correctional officers filed a discrimination lawsuit against Ramsey County on Tuesday, alleging they were prohibited from interacting with former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin while he was detained because of the color of their skin. Chauvin was arrested on May 29th in South Minneapolis, taken to Ramsey County Adult Detention Center. He faces second-degree murder and second-degree manslaughter charges in the death of George Floyd. The correction officers, who are Black, Latino, Pacific Islander, American, and multicultural, or multiracial rather, say the correctional facility's then superintendent Steve Leiden ordered them not to interact with Chauvin or even go to on the floor where he was being held. Why? Dear Lord, talk about trying to, once again, going back to the call we took earlier, the benefit of white European America. Hey, you know, the guy that just killed a guy, let's make sure he doesn't get upset by seeing any minorities. Dear Lord. Their boss called into question the ability to perform their duties in a professional way and did so merely because of the color of their skin, said attorney Lucas Castor, who was representing the correctional officers during a news conference. The officers were not present at the news conference or available for comment. Castor said that they have faced significant emotional and professional harm. They're deeply humiliated and distressed. Of course they would be. You're a correction officer. You have Derek Chauvin there. You're there to do your job. And the – can I even say the guy's misguided? I'm sorry. It seems like it's a racist standard. I don't think you can just say it's misguided. I just think it's racist. You mean the guy, the former superintendent, made a racist call and said, nope, don't let the minorities around Derek Chauvin because apparently we have to worry about his feelings. Some have taken leave due to mental anguish. Some have lost professional opportunities. But more than anything, they lost their professional reputations and their professional dignity. Lied and told supervisors he was trying to protect and support his employees of color and apologized for having erred in judgment. Dude, that's not an error in judgment. Error in judgment is, you know, having a staff of vegetarians and bringing the all-meat hoagie in for Friday's lunch day. This was a coordinated plan to, A, protect Derek Chauvin, and B, humiliate and disparage your own employees. There's no other way to look at it. Out of care and concern and without the comfort of time, I made a decision to limit exposure to employees of color to the murder suspect who would potentially aggravate their feelings. Lydon reported, oh yeah, they can't do their job. Jeez. He said in a statement given during an initial investigation provided by the sheriff's office to the Star Tribune. Lydon has been since demoted. Officers filed a discrimination complaint with the State Department of Human Rights last year on June 19th, which commemorates, the date that commemorates the end of slavery in the United States. The officers later withdrew their complaint in order to file a civil complaint. Filing the lawsuit in February is also significant because it's Black History Month, Castor said. The Ramsey County spokesperson said the county board and sheriff participated in mediation in order to solve the complaints and were unable to reach a settlement. Now that the officers have decided to pursue the lawsuit in the state court, the county board will follow their customary practice of withholding public comment during the pending litigation. Ramsey County spokesman John Sequeland said in a statement the county board previously apologized to the officers for allegedly being removed from their duties during Chauvin's detention and commended them for speaking up about their treatment. It doesn't mean that it's all good. If this whole day hasn't been a, you know, you look at the Capitol rioters, and I've said this, I said the wildest thing I think about this whole crew was how these people thought, well, we're going to try to overthrow the government on Wednesday, but then I got to be back in the office I got to work at the parts counter coming up here on Friday. So I got to be back home to work at the parts counter. Like there wouldn't be any consequences for their actions. That you have an insane amount of people who that did not realize overthrowing democracy was a crime. You have, once again, I have no problem pointing this out. A white man was taken into custody after shooting five people, killing one without dying, without being shot. And that doesn't happen in Black communities or Latino communities nearly as much as it should. You have just, you know, the fact that this guy, it sounds like, was able to get a gun permit after displaying such a lack of mental awareness or competency to even have a spoon, let alone a gun. And here you have this case. Where a bunch of minority correctional workers, who I have zero doubt in my mind, probably were very competent in their job, were able to do things they wanted to, but because an officer said, well, we don't want them. What do you think he is? Do you think he's the Joker from Batman and he's going to, you know, or Loki from the Avengers and he's going to try to trick them into attacking him or something like that? For God's sakes. Your preemptive maneuvering there is so unforgivable, it's not even funny. But once again, this wouldn't have happened. This wouldn't have happened if it was a Black suspect and it was white correctional officers. It wouldn't have. At least we're seeing it, but for God's sakes, do we have a long way to go in this country? Native Roots Radio, up next with Robert Pilot. We're back tomorrow. Till then, see ya.